So this is obviously a phenomenon, right? And but it's a phenomenon, it's one of these phenomena, it's a classic example of a cyber phenomenon that is developing in completely uncharted territory, and where the wonderful things it's enabled, and you know, we can talk about all of the marriages that have come out of it and all of the movements that have come out of it, and how Obama won the presidency by, you know, exploiting his political networks and so on. But at the edges, anomalies and pathologies happen, and we have a hard time figuring out socially how to deal with them. And the laws fit somewhat uncomfortably over our notions of right and wrong about how these things work, and their laws are based on analogies, sometimes written in a state of crisis and immediate reaction. And it's hard to it's hard for the law to keep up and for the practice of law to keep up. So I want to talk about three stories today, and I hope you did some of the background reading so you can participate, or browsing so you can participate in one. But I want to begin with the Lori Drew story, which is heartbreakingly sad. It's an awful story. Okay? So here are the protagonists in the story of Lori Drew and Megan Meyer. This is Megan Meyer. That's her mother, Tina. This is Lori Drew. And this is the teenager, Grills. What's her first name? You remember? This is
Ashley.
Ashley. Ashley. This is Ashley Grills, who is the teenager who was working for Lori Drew. Somebody want to give a précis of what happened here, and we'll allow you to drop all the allegedlies, because obviously Lori Drew is not necessarily agreeing with the facts of the case as presented by Ashley Grills and by Tina Meyer. Who wants to do it? Just take us through it quickly. Someone volunteer. Yeah.
So Megan Meyer was not very friendly to the daughter of Lori Drew, and so Drew asked Ashley Grills to make a false MySpace account to look like she was a young teenage boy, and then correspond with Megan Meyer in hopes of exposing what she did to Drew's daughter. And in the end, in trying to sever their relationship, she told Megan that she would be better off not being in this world, which led to her suicide.
Or at least after which she committed suicide.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to say I don't. We're not going to parse every word closely on this. But part of the context of the case, if you actually read it, is that this girl had some emotional problems before she ever met Josh, and which made her extremely vulnerable, no doubt. And you just can't think of anything more hideous, but that's basically the outline of the story. So I clipped from a couple of reports some of the text of this, because I want you to imagine what the prosecutors, the police, and if the thing winds up going to a jury, the jury, what they're the sort of thing that there's going to be on their mind. So this is from a Fox News story. This is a this these are both not from current testimony. These are reports from a year ago. Megan's parents said she received a message from him, that is Josh, the teenage boy figure that Ashley and or Lori had created. Received a message from him on October 15th of last year, essentially saying he didn't want to be her friend anymore, that he'd heard she wasn't nice to her friends. The next day, as Megan's mother headed out the door to take another daughter to the orthodontist, she knew Megan was upset about internet messages. She asked Megan to log off. Users on MySpace must be at least 14, although Megan was not when she opened her account. MySpace spokeswoman did not return calls seeking comment. Someone using Josh's account was sending cruel messages. Then Megan called her mother, so her mother's now gone to the orthodontist. And, you know, her mother told her to log off because she could see that the messages were upsetting her. She calls her mother, who's now at the orthodontist, I think, saying electronic bulletins were being posted about her, saying things like, Megan Meyer's a slut, Megan Meyer is fat. Megan's mother, who monitored her daughter's online communications, returned home and said she was shocked at the vulgar language her own daughter was sending, and she told her she was upset about it. Megan ran upstairs, and her father, Ron, tried to tell her everything would be all right. So the daughter's, you know, in tears now. Now I'm going to paste in now. I'm going to transition to a different account. This is from CNN. When Josh broke off the relationship, Tina Meyer said, when Josh broke off the relationship, Tina Meyer said, that's the mother, her daughter was devastated. She was looking for me to help calm herself down, like I always did, and be there for her. And I was upset because I didn't like the language she was using, and I was angry she didn't sign off when I told her to, Tina Meyer told CNN. She said to me, you're supposed to be my mom, you're supposed to be on my side. So she, you know, in this moment when her daughter was, you know, so distressed at the name she was being called, you know, her mother said to her, you know, I told you not to, you know, hang on there, and, you know, why did you do it? The daughter says, you know, as it just sounds exactly like daughters, okay, I know this well, you're supposed to be on my side. And she, you know, took off running upstairs, Tina Meyer said. Tina Meyer found her daughter hanging by the belt shortly afterwards. And, you know, it's as if my daughter killed herself with a gun, Meyer's father, Ron, told CNN, as if they loaded the gun for her. This is later, right? So this, they now being after they discovered that Josh was a fictitious creation of Lori and or Ashley. This is the father's. No, he's not talking about MySpace. He's talking about these two people. And there's actually, you know, if you go to these sites, there's more details, and there's more of these sort of direct quotations, which are, you know, horrible. So this, you know, allegedly some combination of Ashley Grills and Lori Drew, you know, played with the mind of this girl, and the girl wound up killing herself. And I think the allegation, you know, is that this last message, the kiss-off message from Josh, was the last straw. Or at least that's presumably the, you know. But so there's a reasonable question, you know, is the person who puts the last, who drops the last straw, you know, responsible? Yes, Tyler.
A question from the question tool.
Yes.
Someone asked whether Drew would be considered culpable in the suicide had she solicited someone to pretend to be Josh by telephone, rather than.
Well, we're gonna come to this question of. I don't know the answer to that question. Okay, I don't know the answer to the question. All we know is what the Missouri prosecutors thought when they tried to figure out what to do. This is from the CNN site. In December, Missouri prosecutors declined to file charges against Drew, saying there was no law under which she could be charged. There is no way that anybody could know that talking to someone or saying that you're mean to your friends on the internet could create a substantial risk, St. Charles County Prosecutor Jack Banas said. Under the law, we just couldn't show that. Okay, so, you know, we're impaired here by my not being a lawyer, but there is a implication here that if you could show that what you were doing created a you know, a substantial risk. I don't know whether that's a legal term or, you know, or not, then the situation might be different. But he didn't think it was possible to show that. What happened since the book was written, and when we wrote the book, we left it in this sort of state of suspended animation, which is, let's, for the sake of argument, agree that what these, some combination of these two people, Ashley and Laurie, did was very bad and very mean and so on. And the state prosecutors can't find a law under which it's illegal, whether there was any, where there was a crime committed. Okay, so what happens now is that Laurie Drew is being prosecuted in a federal court in California for violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and in particular Section A2C of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which says you're committed a crime if anyone's committed a crime who intentionally accesses a computer without authorization or exceeds authorized access and thereby obtains information from any protected computer if the conduct involved an interstate or foreign communication. So I guess I should say what's happened is that that Ashley Grills turned state's witness in exchange for an assurance of immunity if she would go spill the beans. Laurie Drew, her attorney, I think is stating that it was all Ashley. Ashley is saying it was all Laurie, and she was not that it was all Laurie, but she did the keyboarding, but she was operating under instructions. And I don't know who sent this very last one, you know, the world would be better off without you, whether Ashley made that up on her own or what. I'm not sure exactly what the detail is there, but I'm not sure, you know, that, you know, the hinges on it. So that's the trial. So you know, Ashley has now testified, I guess. So here's the law. And so we're in Part A. What did I say? A2C, I think, is what I said. I think we're just below the line here is the clause that we're actually going to be focused on, which is the one they've charged. But let's read the whole thing so that you, because it's important to read it to have some sense of what the context and congressional intent, what kind of situations Congress had in mind when they passed this law. Whoever, having knowingly accessed the computer without authorization or exceeding authorized access, and by means of such conduct, having obtained information that has been determined by the United States government pursuant to an executive order or statute to require protection against unauthorized disclosure for reasons of national defense or foreign relations, or any restricted data as defined in paragraph Y of section 11 of the Atomic Energy, something about the Atomic Energy Act, with reason to believe such information could be used to the injury of the United States. So this all has something to do with national security. Or to the advantage of any foreign nation, willfully communicates, delivers, transmits, or causes to be communicated, delivered, transmitted, or attempts to communicate, deliver, or transmit, or cause to be communicated, delivered, transmitted, to any person not entitled to receive it or willfully retains the same and fails to deliver to the officer or employee of the United States entitled to receive it. Okay, so this is a national security paragraph, I think. I don't want to read it too quickly, but I think this all has. Okay, but that's not the part, that's not the clause that they're claiming Laurie Drew violated. It's this one. Okay? Whoever intentionally accesses a computer without authorization or exceeds authorized access and thereby obtains A, information contained in a financial record of a financial institution, like a bank or something, or credit card issuer as defined in section da-da-da-da, or contained in a file of a consumer reporting agency on a consumer, so a, you know, one of these credit agencies or something. Information from any department or agency of the United States. So here if you're essentially, you know, breaking into a bank's computer or a credit card company's computer. Here, if you're breaking into the computer of a, you know, of the Internal Revenue Service or the CIA or any other department of government, but those are the kinds of things that you'd go after. Or C, information from any protected computer if the conduct involved an interstate or foreign communication. So this is the crucial clause here. And then just read a couple more just to give some sense of what the other context is. Intentionally without authorization to access any non-public computer, this is again kind of departments or agencies of the United States, stuff about government of the United States. Knowingly with intent to defraud, access a protected computer without authorization by means of further intended fraud, obtains anything of value, so this is like stealing money using a computer. And then the fifth knowingly causes a transmission of a program, information, code, or command as a result of such conduct. Skip over these. Interstate foreign commerce, government of the United States, with intent to extort from any person, firm, association, educational institution, financial institution, government entity, or other legal entity, any money or any other thing of value shall be punished as provided in Section C. And then you go on to Section C to see what the penalties are. And there are various things depending on exactly what you do. Up to 10 years, up to 20 years, not more than 1 year, not more than 5 years. And I guess this is the clause. This is the clause that they are that applies to the particular kind of violation, according to the government, that she is said to have committed. So she's potentially going to go to jail for 5 years. Okay, so let's back up here, you know, and look at this. Intentionally accesses a computer without authorization, or exceeds authorized access and thereby obtains information from any protected computer if the conduct involved an interstate or foreign communication. So what do you think that was meant to cover? You have to go back and read the congressional, you know, the debate of Congress and the context and all the rest of that.
Spying clause.
Some kind. It's something to do with, you know, intentionally accessing a computer without authorization. You think has to mean hacking. You know. Now, by the way, I should pause here because I don't like to use the word hacking because the word hacking is a. I'm old enough that the word hacking was actually a noble word when it was. This is a good. Hacking was a good thing. Hacking was being clever. Hacking was a way of thing. But I have to accept the fact that the world has moved beyond that linguistic purity, and now hacking always means breaking into things by cracking passwords or something like that. So this is presumably what intentionally accessing a computer without authorization or exceeding authorized access. And then obtaining information from a protected computer if the conduct involved in interstate or foreign communication, you know, my interpretation is this is a catch-all to cover, to justify having federal law kick in here, because they, you know, if it was just something going on within the state, the federal government wouldn't have jurisdiction. So it's somehow because this is a interstate commerce or something like that that's being. Okay? So this law has never been applied to a situation like the Laurie Drew case. And can anybody explain how the government is claiming that Laurie Drew intentionally accessed a computer without authorization or exceeding authorized access and thereby obtained information from a protected computer involving interstate or foreign communication? I mean, she was dealing with the MySpace page of Megan Meyer, who lived a block away from her. Where is the interstate communication, and where is the accessing? She didn't break into Megan Meyer's MySpace account or anything like that. What did she do, Amar?
Well, the New York Times article says it was a violation of the terms of service.
Right. So what was the violation of the terms of service?
I mean, was it the age issue? Was she pretending to be somebody she wasn't?
She was pretending to be somebody she wasn't.
Yeah.
She was pretending to be somebody she wasn't. And so that's being construed, according to the government, as accessing a computer without authorization.
But the state thing, I don't know.
The MySpace page isn't hosted on a local client. It's hosted on a MySpace server that's probably somewhere near Fox Interactive Media and Santa Monica, California.
And the reason she's being prosecuted, you're exactly right, the reason she's being prosecuted in California is that's where MySpace is located. That's where the MySpace server is located. So the communications between Lori / Ashley and Megan, although they were only a block apart from each other physically, were being routed through the servers in California. So that made it an interstate communication. So there's nothing in here, in the government's argument, as I understand it, that has anything to do with the fact that Megan Meyer died. Right? Had Megan Meyer, gotten over it, as far as the applicability of this law to Lori Drew's behavior, as far as I can see, there would have been no difference. The application of this law in this case has nothing to do with the death.
But it's the Elliot Ness clause, right?
It's the Elliot Ness.
They're going after Al Capone for tax evasion.
It's going after Al Capone for tax evasion. By using the MySpace services, you represent and warrant that all registration information you submit is truthful and accurate. Okay, so presumably when Lori /
Ashley,
thank you, opened up an account and said they were a 14-year-old boy.
They were not.
Yeah. And therefore, they have fraudulently, is the, to go back to the other tab here, they've accessed the computer without authorization or exceeding authorized access. That's the argument anyway. It seems to me pretty easy to fall afoul, if that's fraud, if lying about anything or failing to keep up to date and accurate, failing to maintain the accuracy of information on a social networking page constitutes fraud or unauthorized access in the sense of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Probably there are lots of people who have committed that act. Now, what's the information? What was the information, according to the government's argument? And we're making this up as we go along because I haven't given you the government's, statement to read. But let's try to think it through. When they say that she's not only intentionally accessed the computer without authorization, but she's thereby obtained information from a protected computer, what's the information that she has set out to get?
The little girl's MySpace information.
Yeah, well, she wanted to know what was going on in Megan Meyer's mind. But this is also unprecedented, I think that's the factual statement I can make, because the law has never been applied this way. you know, all the rest of these clauses are kind of about, you know, there's a database in the computer somehow, you know, credit card records or something like that, and you've gone and you've obtained through interstate commerce, okay, you know, gone across state lines electronically to get information out of the database that you weren't supposed to have. Here it says that getting information from a person, you know, if you did this unauthorized access in order to get information from a person by having the person email it to you or post it on their web page and then you look at their web page or get a text message from that person or something like that, that constitutes getting information from a protected computer. The term protected computer means a computer exclusively for the use of a financial institution, or which is used in interstate or foreign commerce or communication, and their construal is that interstate communication means pretty much everything, unless you happen to have the good fortune, and who would know whether the server was in the same state. I mean, none of us knows where the servers are located. Then it doesn't say that anything involving a protected computer is subject to this law. Then you have to go back and read, you know, paragraph 2 again. Here's the Facebook terms of service. In consideration of your use of this site, you agree to A, provide accurate, current, and complete information about you as may be prompted by registration forms, maintain the security of password identification, and C, maintain and promptly update the registration data and any information you provide to the company to keep it accurate, current, and complete. So literally, right, this, according to my reading of this, this says, you know, if you've got a girlfriend and you drop her and you don't update that information promptly, you're in violation of the Facebook terms of service. Okay, so this is a crazy reading, all right? I don't doubt that. But it begs the question of how crazy is the reading under which the feds are trying to put Lori Drew away for 5 years. There's one more. This is actually my favorite. Here's one you never knew. Your relationship with Google. In order to use the services, okay, what are the services? Services are Google's products, software, and software services and websites, referred collectively as the services. So this is not like a Google account. It includes a Google account, but it's like everything that you can get at with Google. In order to use these services, you must first agree to the terms. Who knew? I thought the Google window just came up and you just used it. You may not use the services if you do not accept the terms. Now, you can accept the terms by clicking to accept or agree to the terms, where this option is made available to you by Google with the interface with any service, or B, by using the services. Okay? Who knew? You know, a little Google search window goes in, you type, you know, Johnny Carson or, you know, Mary Jones or something like that. You've just agreed to all of this. All of it. You've agreed to all this stuff. Even the stuff that's capitalized, the stuff that's not capitalized, everything. The first time you did a Google search. Okay? And, you know, there are other things. You may not use the services, and you may not accept the terms if you're not of legal age to form a binding contract with Google. Any of your kids use Google? Put them away for 5 years. Okay, I'm not pleading Lori Drew's case here. I think this woman should be, whatever the worst imaginable thing that could possibly happen to this woman should happen to her. But here's the problem. The problem is that the federal government has stretched this Computer Fraud and Abuse Act so thin in its you know, in their attempt to find something on which to put her in jail, that, you know, if this, you know, if she's actually prosecuted, and it's going to be very hard for any jury, I think, given the opportunity to put this woman away, not to do it. Right? You know, they had the defense tried to get the whole evidence, the whole facts of the suicide excluded from the trial because it would be emotional and prejudicial. The judge thought about it and said no. So even though, as I said, in some sense, this is not a trial about manslaughter or, you know, anything involving a death, it's just a trial about, you know, terms of service. So that was admitted. So then there was this, you know, very emotional testimony from, I guess from Ashley. I don't know whether Megan's mother has testified already. Also, she may have. I'm not sure. You know, extremely emotional testimony, and people breaking down. I mean, you can imagine. You know, Ashley tried to kill herself after, because she, you know, when this thing all came out, because she felt so guilty. You can see she's not a very healthy looking kid right now, and she's been bombarded with hate mail and so on, so she's barely going out of her house, and so there was all of this stuff that came out in the trial. And after, you know, after that day's testimony, the defense attorney asked for a mistrial, and the judge said no. You know, you should have objected at the time. If you'd objected, I would have sustained the objections, but you didn't, so it's all, you know, it's all going to stand there. So, you know, the jury's got to feel, you know, horrible. Horrible. But, my God. I mean, you know, it looks to me like if this is sustained, if this is what the Computer Fraud and, you know, Abuse Act says, you know, that you know, any of these violations of the terms of service in pursuit of getting information from somebody electronically. That's the other half of it, right? So, like, you know, lying on your Facebook account about how old you are in order to, you know, get a date. Or in order to get somebody to disclose something. You know, that all looks like that would apply. So the civil liberties lawyers are, you know, with considerable distaste, I think, you know, coming to the defense of Lori Drew, at least insofar as they're saying this is not the statute under which she could be protected, because the worry is that if the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act is interpreted that broadly, then, as you say, you know, the Al Capone game then becomes available. They bring you up on, you know, tax evasion charges. They don't get a conviction on that. You know, they find something here that you have, you know, violated. That's, you know, only very marginally related, and, you know, convict you on that instead because you use your computer in some fraudulent way in these terms in order to get some information, and now you've violated. Now, not that anybody should ever use computers fraudulently. I mean, no one's defending them, but there's some disproportion here as the definition is, you know, stretched out. This is an example now of a real Swiss Army knife of a law. You can use it for almost anything. And it's you know, I know what's going to happen. It's brilliant. Amar.
I mean, I think as you've shown by the terms of service, if this, you know, if they were to succeed with this, it could open up just... So it would give the company so much power. Facebook could sue you if you didn't update your profile. You know, It just seems sort of...
Not just sue you. This is like not a civil thing at all. They just put you in jail.
But it seems
you've got to find a prosecutor who's willing to do it.
It seems like they were just trying to find a way to prosecute Lori Drew.
They are. They're trying to find a way to prosecute Lori Drew by using this Computer Fraud and Abuse Act in a way that has never been used before. There have been lots of successful prosecutions using the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, but they're all for people who've, like, you know, hacked computers to steal money and, you know, the sort of things that you would imagine.
I mean, how come they can't charge him with, like, harassment or, like, something, I don't know, like, why?
Well, and indeed, you know, a number of states now have responded, and it may even be a federal, you know, with cyberbullying laws. But apparently there wasn't one in Missouri, or there wasn't one at the time anyway. So people are writing some cyberbullying laws, and I don't know whether they're existing laws. This is sort of goes now to the question, Tyler, you said somebody asked, you know, there may be telephonic bullying laws or face-to-face bullying laws. I suppose there probably are, but apparently they didn't cover the, you know, electronic communication.
Well, perhaps annoying over the telephone, as we were discussing.
Anything else on the question tool?
Nothing really, just discussing. There's one point was that another, just one more example of why you might want to violate terms of service is by providing false information because you're afraid that the company can't protect information about you.
So yeah. So, you know, or you know, people sometimes when they go to sign up for accounts, if they get accounts in lots of different places, they'll use a different middle initial so that if data leaks, you know, if somebody is selling their personal data, you know, they'll be able to figure out which site was giving it away. You know, providing a false name, you know, if somebody wanted to use it that way. So I don't know, you know, we've got to, you know, wrap up here. But does anybody have a, I mean, you know, none of you is a prosecutor, none of us is a prosecutor or a lawyer, and we don't know the legal code of Missouri or, you know, all the federal code, but, you know, I suppose the right thing to happen to Lori Drew is, you know, they get the laws to cover this situation and you know, make sure try to make sure it doesn't happen again. But anybody got any other thoughts on it? It's a you know, it's just a horrible story with no good answer that I can see.
But this has introduced an unresolved issue of what do we do about terms of service violations? Is this a problem? You know, how can we code in the law whether or not terms of service violations should be treated as a bad thing?